Hey, this is WTOP's Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by, just say your name and your role with the show.
Amari Cheatham, I'm playing Ira Aldridge.
And this is in Red Velvet, which is coming to Shakespeare Theater Company June 16th through July 17th. So it starts this week. June 16th is, when is this? Thursday. So get your tickets now. Hey, thanks so much for joining us on a Monday, which is sacred in theater.
Not a problem.
Awesome. Well, before we dive in, this is a really cool premise, the play Red Velvet. It was written in 2012. Start with the premise. You know, what's it about?
So, Red Velvet is about, it's centered around Ira Aldridge, who was the first Black man to play Othello in 1833. And that's the short of it.
And real quick, you said it was 1833, but which theater in London was it?
Covent Garden.
Gotcha. So they're staging Shakespeare's Othello, and Ira Aldrich, which is your character, becomes the first Black actor ever to play the role of Shakespeare's Othello. So groundbreaking stuff. Talk right. about sort of the backdrop that it comes with, because London, you know, we all know, you know, in American history, we know Civil War, you know, emancipation, you know, about abolition of slavery, etc. here. But it from in London, you know, most folks might not know the history of that there. So this show is happening right around the time that Britain is trying to abolish slavery too.
Right, that's right. And the Jamaican colony is up in arms and rebelling, and you know, the stake in sugar is high at the time. But they're also trying to abolish, so there's a lot of tension around whether we should keep slavery in the colonies or whether we should abolish it.
Gotcha. So are people, I assume, but, you know, tell our listeners about, it's probably pretty heated around that time. Are audiences, you know, hesitant to seeing a Black actor playing it? And how does that make your character even more, you know, of a badass that, you know, he's out fighting this show, you know, it's a culture shock for those audiences.
Well, what's interesting is that the audience accepts it. There's in the play, it's talked about that there's this roaring applause after Ira performs, but it was the powers that be that were against it and shut the theater down, shut the play down, shut the production down, and essentially pushed Ira out of London. Basically, that day's version of being blackballed.
Right.
So he had to go on a tour of Eastern Europe. After that, and that's really where he established his legacy, was after that.
Talk about what you mean by that. What sort of legacy did he do after that? Just became a prolific actor elsewhere?
Well, he performed in places that had never heard of Shakespeare, never seen it performed, and you know, being a Black actor doing Othello, doing it in a pure sense. He was exposing that part of the world to Shakespeare in a way that they hadn't received before.
Gotcha. And thanks for just to piggyback off something you said, thanks for making that distinction about, you know, that the audiences, the actual people, were not only, you know, welcoming, but were thrilled to see the performance. And the antagonists of this piece are sort of the powers that be. When you say powers that be, are you talking about like theater managers, you're talking about, like,
yeah, the
government, producer. Or what are you talking about?
The producer. So in this case, in the theater's case, the producers of the show, which, you know, can extend to the government, the higher powers. But in our case, the producers, who were the people who held the power in that space at that time.
Gotcha. The producers, the people holding the purse strings, and
that's probably right.
Extends out into a lot of the old white money, and you know, all the
right
donors, exactly. And the media and the government and et cetera. So you're fighting kind of an uphill battle, but you pull it off. It's a cool story, man. Yeah. Well, cool. What do you love about, I mean, we've talked about, you know, his social significance, you know, racial groundbreaker, but what do you like about Ira Aldrich, you know, as a human, as a person? What did you sort of, how do you play him sort of just as a man?
You know, what the play kind of brings up for me personally, as I think about the character and work through the character, is sometimes sometimes our flaws can seem like flaws in the moment. Even if you're standing your ground, you know, you could be standing in your ground and the world is, your world is burning down around you. And you might not have the answer for that. And it might seem like in the moment that you're making a mistake. But if you stay true to that, you know, the hope is that on the other end, you know, you'll benefit from standing your ground and for standing in your truth. Now, you might not, things might not go the way that you planned, but if you, there's something about if you stay true to what you believe or, you know, what your convictions are, that, and this is why it's hard to do that.
Yeah.
Because in the moment, you know, it looks like it can destroy you. But if it doesn't and you push through and you're consistent and you're tenacious, then it'll pay off, you know, down the road. But there still are, you know, consequences for it. It's not an easy road to stand up for what you believe in. You know, it sometimes gets looked at with rose tinted glasses, I think. Mm-hmm. But people sacrifice to do that.
Absolutely. When you said rose tinted glasses, I thought of the title Red Velvet. What's in the title? What does that refer to in the show?
So it's interesting. So the references that Ira makes to the Red Velvet is memories from a kid of watching theater, and he talks about the when the curtains are closed and you're waiting for a performance to start, there's the expectation, the anticipation that comes from, you know, what's going to happen when those curtains open. So he says the expectations of greatness and so the thrill of that is kind of how he fell in love with the theater.
Very cool. Thanks for explaining. I always want to know what's in the title. I want to hear about the writer. It's Lalita Chakrabarty. Is that how you say it?
That's how I would say it. Yes.
Okay, cool.
I haven't met her. I haven't talked to her. Okay.
What about her writing? If just try to get one soundbite on her, about the writing is, you know, I mean, we know about the premise and the themes, but what about the actual writing itself is juicy to grapple with every night?
You know, that's an interesting question. There's any playwright worth their salt is always trying to not necessarily perfectly emulate a human speech pattern, but get to some sort of truth in the way that we communicate. And depending on, you know, each playwright has their signature way of doing that. And once you unlock that, it's actually easier to with the really good playwrights, there is something to unlock to make it easier to absorb the lines so that, you know, so that you're not just trying to kind of learning them by rote, but that they can get into your body, because there's something really honest about the experience. And Lolita's, the way she writes dialogue in some moments kind of, it mirrors the way we talk and the way we can, our minds can jump from thought to thought seemingly randomly, but we're trying to express a greater idea. And so understanding and finding the greater idea and really grasping onto that is how you piece those thoughts together, piece those words together that she's written. And so it's been interesting in that regard, and, you know, figuring that I know when I'm not tapped in to a certain part when the line isn't sticking. And so I know I have to come at it a different way in terms of what the character is experiencing in that moment. There's something that I'm missing. So that's been fascinating to play with and to explore and to grapple with.
Cool. Very cool. Well, the other person we need to talk about, of course, is director Jade King Carroll. Talk about how this is her Shakespeare Theater Company debut. Talk about how just she visualizes it for the stage. You know, we are a radio station. So paint us a visual picture of, like, sort of what we see in terms of the set, or, you know, I don't know if there's period costumes, you know, the visual elements.
Okay. Well, it is fully fully period, but it's a gorgeous set, and it's a table. The stage is on a huge table that turns, a circle that's cut out, and it turns. So you see the three different sets: a green room, the stage, and a dressing room. And so for the first time in tech over the last 2 days, I've been standing on this table as it turns around. And so we're exposed to three different settings that the play is set in. And it's all beautiful to see and experience, and the costumes are amazing. This might be something else to edit.
Sure.
But I want to say his name. Rodrigo, the costume designer.
Rodrigo Munoz?
Yes, that's his. Yes. So they've been working together. And do you have the list of everybody right there?
I do.
Okay, so also the set designer, I'd like to.
Yushin Chen, is that right?
Yes. So they all three came together and just built a beautiful set. The costumes are incredible. And then Jade is interesting because she, you know, the play is relatively serious, dealing with a serious subject matter. And there's levity written into the play, but Jade also comes with a lightness in dealing with the subject matter that kind of has brought a bright tint to everything that we've been doing, even though we're dealing with such a heavy subject matter and this is so filled with so much history. You know, a lot of times people can find history to be boring, but when you're dealing with a director such as Jade, who has the heart that she has, it's been a pleasure, honestly. So
that's awesome. Well, it sounds like a really cool show. I guess before we run, I want to remind our listeners, you've done, they're going to recognize you. They've seen you in shows, but also on screen. You've done some really, some of the best movies of recent years. You know, you did Judas and the Black Messiah, which was freaking incredible. You know, Roman J. Israel Esquire, Django Unchained, Crown Heights, you know, a lot of the really good ones in recent years. I know we don't have time to really go through all of them, but yeah, I mean, just maybe memories of just working with people like, you know, Kaluuya, Stanfield, Denzel, Jamie Foxx. I mean, these are titans, but, you know, do you pick up little pieces, you know, little acting tips along the way?
Yeah, absolutely. From all those folks that you named, the first Kaluuya comes to mind. I mean, the amount of focus that he had was incredible. You know, you hear stories about actors who will get agitated or, you know, angry at people throwing their focus on a film set. Well, this film set, the Judas and the Black Messiah, had a lot of young energy on the set, and he has some heavy lifting to do. And just when those young guys were around him, they would make a lot of noise and just bringing all of their young energy, young spirit, and he would participate with them. But then when it was time to shoot, he was able to you know, ground himself and do his job. And so I thought that was an admirable trait of his. So that was one. Would you like something else?
Yeah, I know it's your off day, so
no.
It's up to you. That was a great memory of Kaluuya. How about, let's say, Denzel in Roman J. Israel Esquire?
Oh man, Denzel was super generous on camera. Super generous off camera. So while I'm in front of the camera doing my, you know, tiny role in the film, the way he supported me so that I could do my job as best I could off, he was off camera behind me giving 110%, even though the camera wasn't on him, was just super generous and honestly, you know, humbling that he would give that and the camera's not on him. Now, I know it benefits the film for me to do well. And if the film does well, it benefits him. But, you know, all that aside, you know, because there are stories of actors of a certain stature who would just, you know, go away. You got to bring in somebody else to a stand in to like look at and pitch your lines off of. But, you know, Denzel stuck around and really went above and beyond. And it was just one of the most gracious acts that I've experienced from a fellow actor on a movie set.
That's awesome. And then how about Lakeith Stanfield? Well, but you mentioned Judas and the Black Messiah. He was in that as well, but also Crown Heights, which was sort of a more underrated indie film that I enjoyed, but I don't know as many people saw it as some of the other ones we're talking about. But yeah. talk about just Lakeith. I mean, he's really come on in the last, I don't know, 5 to 10 years. He's like one of the best going today.
Huge. Yeah, big time, big time. Lakeith he's a man of the people. And even though he has a way of, there's something about him that you can tell that he is less, he's not as jovial about, you know, being in large groups of people, but he still understands the power of captivating the people in his immediate surrounding. And so the way that he kind of kept things light on set, I took note of that. And people love him for it.
Absolutely.
And he does phenomenal work. You know, phenomenal work. He's one of those actors that you're watching them. You might be on set watching him and you go, oh man, that was good. That was good. But then when you see the take, you're like, oh, that was phenomenal.
I almost don't even need to list them, but Get Out and Sorry to Bother You and the harder they fall
of course. That's right,
come on,
that's right,
crushing,
yeah. make a star. Yeah,
sure. If you got time, you were also in Detroit with John Boyega, Anthony Mackie. You're literally working with all the best actors today.
Yeah, well, those scenes, I didn't work with in Detroit.
Right.
I was in a scene that they weren't in. I was in one of the early scenes as a cop. It was a bit of a setup scene that they weren't in.
But underrated movie. And then we'll let you run, but real quick, we mentioned it.
Yep.
Django. What was it like working with Tarantino and Jamie Foxx? I mean, Leo DiCaprio. Say no more.
So, Tarantino, the thing I remember about that was how much, so people, you know, as you go through life, you hear people talk about, you know, would you rather be, was it loved or respected, or is that, right. That sounds familiar, right?
Love or something respected. Like that, yeah.
Well, you know, from that set, I learned about, you know, people loving you because they respect you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that respect is as an artist or as anybody with a goal in mind that's leading a team, you know, sometimes you have to go and do things that are outside of the norm or out of the box or a bit extreme. And you know, people might even say, yeah, you're crazy for doing things the way you do, but if you get it done and you treat people well, you know, people will accept those things, the outlandish things that you do, and people will want to follow you because you're leading them down. You're not taking them down the beaten path. You're most likely going to take them into a new space. And I think that the amount of respect that Tarantino's crew, because these are people that he had worked with on multiple movies. Yeah. The crew has such a respect for him, even down to like the makeup people and the hair people, talked about how much they loved working with him because he demands so much of you, but he treats you with respect. And I experienced that to a smaller degree than they did, but how they spoke of him was definitely in line with what I experienced personally. And Jamie Foxx, you know, Jamie Foxx is one of those guys. He's so down to earth, but so extremely talented. It's hard to imagine that both of those personalities can exist in the same body. I mean, we were you know, joking around with him, playing chess with him. You know, and this is all right before he's about to go on screen and work. So just the rapport that he had with us, even though he's Jamie Foxx, you know, was amazing to me.
Man, it's just, I mean, think about already, and you're really, I mean, you're just getting going in your career too. Like, but think about all these names and stories. I mean, this will be a hell of a memoir or stories for the grandkids or whatever one day, you know, like,
yeah,
it's awesome, but the fire is just going. Keep it going. Awesome. I appreciate you taking all this time on your off day. We'll let you run.
Not a problem at all.
Again, everyone, it is Red Velvet. It's going to be at Shakespeare Theater Company in D.C., June 16th through July 17th. I guess, like, final seconds, talk directly to our listeners. You know, hey, everybody, come on out. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah, come on out. Come play with us. We're on stage in all this costume and makeup, having a good time. And also, you know, we're learning. And hopefully you guys come out and learn, too. And come get your life changed. Come get your perspective shifted. Down at the Shakespeare Theater. Come on out.
Come get your life changed. There you go. Come on. what more do you need to say? All right. Hey, thanks for doing this. I appreciate you. Nice meeting you. Well, what do you say? Meeting you audially.
yeah. Audio. That's right. I'll take it.
All right. Take it easy.
You too, Jason.